So I'd like to thank the organizers for this great opportunity to come to Toronto. And so, as well explained in the series of lectures by Ji Xiao, there's a deep and useful connection between quivers, representation theory of quivers, and Kac-Moody algebras. And this connection goes both ways. So it's useful for both parties. Namely, Kac-Moody algebra tells us a lot about where the indecomposable objects in the representation category of quivers lie, and also about their extensions, and also about the derived category. And on the other hand, we can use quivers to construct certain canonical bases. So here, applications are canonical bases in quantum group corresponding to Kac-Moody algebras, and also we can get crystal bases, and then we can even get some interesting representations. So this last part is work of Nakajima. And we can get representations of both enveloping algebra and the quantum loop groups. So this has been really successful. And so what I want to describe is some kind of hopeful analog of this theory, but so hopeful analog where we replace quivers with category of coherent sheaves. So we replace quivers with coherent sheaves on curves. And the corresponding algebras are some kind of affinization of the above. So affinization of Kac-Moody algebras. And so here we are only going to consider certain special coherent sheaves on certain special curves, and we're going to get only a little bit smaller class than affinization of all Kac-Moody algebras, but this is going to be enough to produce certain toroidal algebras. So, two toroidal algebras. And so these are the first examples in non-Kac-Moody type that we get. And so this is one reason why it should be interesting. And maybe I should just make a remark, is that, well, there is a well-known connection between quivers and coherent sheaves on curves. So quivers and coherent sheaves on curves, these are two fundamental examples of abelian categories of homological dimension 1. So hereditary categories are hereditary. And sometimes they even have isomorphic derived categories. So for instance, the representations of the conical quiver, this is derived equivalent to category of coherent sheaves on P1. So from this point of view, it makes sense that since we know that so much of the going above can be stated in terms of the derived category, then it makes sense to hope for something similar here. And actually, Happel recently was able to prove that if you have an abelian hereditary category with a tilting object, then it corresponds to either representation of a quiver or something which comes from coherent sheave on a curve. So we really have almost all interesting hereditary categories this way. Okay. So I will work my way from coherent sheaves on curves to loop algebras. So let me describe the geometric data that we have. So as I said, it's not all curves. So we start with X, some smooth projective curve over some field K. And then we require that it has enough symmetry. So G should be a subgroup in the automorphism group of X such that the quotient is isomorphic to P1. Okay, so there are lots of examples like this I will give in a few minutes. And the category we're going to be interested is the category of G-equivariant coherent sheaves on X. So this is the category of G-equivariant coherent sheaves on X. And I recall that what is a coherent sheaf, what is an equivariant coherent sheaf? It's two things. It's a coherent sheaf equipped with a G structure. And what is a G structure? So we call G structure on a sheaf F. This is a collection of isomorphisms between F and shifts of F by elements in the group. Plus compatibility. All right, so here this is G is an element in the finite group. And so basically what this means is that we have compatible identification of the fibers, if you want, over a point X and a translate of X by the group G. This is what the G structure on F is. So maybe I should just draw a picture. If we think about vector bundles, then let's say this is our curve. Let's say this is a point X. This is a point GX. Then we have the fiber over X. We have the fiber over GX. And these are vector spaces. And phi G provides isomorphism of vector spaces like this in a compatible way when we compose the G. Okay, so naively, one would think that category of G equivariant coherent sheaves on X, this should be the same thing, more or less, as coherent sheaves on X over G, which is coherent sheaf on P1. Right? But this is completely wrong, because this would be true if the map from X to P1. This is just so X over G. This is just a projection map. If this were unramified, then this would have a chance of being true. But in our situation, we have lots of ramification. So ramified at points, let's say lambda 1 up to lambda n, and index ramification is P1. Up to Pn. So maybe I can draw another picture for this. This is our curve, and we have the projection map to P1, and then we have certain points. This is lambda 1, say, where if we look at the inverse image or in the neighborhood of lambda 1, then we see that around lambda 1, we have as many elements in the inverse image in the fiber as elements in G, but then sheets start coming together at this point, and they come together in bundles of this ramification index. So this is P1, and this is P2, this point is lambda 2, and so on. So we have to keep this picture in mind. And in fact, we can use this now to give the correct alternate definition for G-equivariant coherent sheaves, which is in terms of parabolic sheaves on X. So this is just a remark. In fact, G-equivariant coherent sheaves on X, this is equivalent to D-parabolic coherent sheaves on P1. Where what is a D parabolic? So if you look just at the vector bundles, then we get the same thing with vector bundles on P1. And so here D is the sum lambda I pi. maybe I should say pi lambda I. And what is a parabolic structure on a vector bundle? It just consists of a filtration at the given points of length given by the degree of the point. So it just means that I have my vector bundle, and then over each of those points, lambda I, inside on the fiber, I have a filtration. So how can I write this? This is a parabolic structure. Is a filtration of length pi in the fiber. So parabolic structure on E, say D parabolic structure on E, is a filtration of length pi in the fiber of the point. Okay, so we have we can describe this in terms of coherent sheaves on just P1, but then we need this extra parabolic structure. And so this makes it much more complicated. And in fact, if we take any coherent sheaf on X, we can just act on it by the group G, make the sum of all its translates, and this will give us a G equivariant coherent sheaf. So this says that this category of G equivariant coherent sheaves looks much more like the category of coherent sheaves on X than category of coherent sheaves on P1. So, okay, and then another fundamental remark, too, is that given any divisor D, positive, effective, there exists, we can find X and G. Okay. So let me give some examples now of this kind of situation. Well, we can start off with P1 itself. Then, of course, if we take any group of automorphism of P1, the quotient will still be P1. And so this is example, say, A, X equals P1, and G should be a subgroup of SO3. All right. Now we know that these subgroups are related to affine Dynkin diagrams of type ADE by the Mackay correspondence. So this will come up again. And then, more interesting examples, we can take X to be elliptic curve. And then we can always take G to be Z over 2Z. This is always possible. And this is just given by the group with 1 and then the map sending Z to minus Z. And with 3 points, right, at least 3 points. Right, given any D with at least 3 points. No. No. For instance, here we can have 3 points of ramification index 3. It's possible. So in order to construct this, all you need is to find a representation of a free group with given orders of generators. And this is always possible. So I'll give an example where you have 3 points, each of them with index 3. Okay, so this is one. Then we also can look at X is elliptic curve epsilon I, and then we can take G to be Z over 4Z, and then we can also look at X is epsilon J, and then we take G equals either Z over 3Z or Z over 6Z. And this one has 3 points of ramification 3, 3, 3. ramification index. Multiplicity. So, okay, I'm looking on P1. So maybe I'm looking on the multiplicity on P1, not on the elliptic curve. Yes. I don't think so, but okay, so these will be the main cases of interest. Okay, so now we have to understand the link with Lie algebras. So J is the third root of unity.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Okay, so link with the Lie algebras. Okay, so let's do the fundamental example of P1, which is due to Kapranov, and I should say that his work is at the basis motivation for all the following work. So what do we have in this situation? As with any hereditary category, we can start by looking at the Grothendieck group of the category of coherent sheaves on P1. And this is Z2. And the map is the following. The class of a sheaf F is the rank of F and the degree of F. Okay. Now, we also have the Euler form. Which says, which is defined in the following way. So Euler form of M and N, this is equal to dimension of Homm minus x1 N, and then we also have to take the same thing exchanging M and N. So okay. And then we can look at indecomposable objects in this category. So right now, what we have is we have a lattice, and we have a lattice equipped with a natural bilinear form on it. And now we're looking at the places in this lattice where indecomposable objects will lie. So let's look at indecomposables. Well, we have line bundles, so O of I for I in Z, and then we know that every vector bundle is a direct sum of line bundles. This is a theorem. And then we also have the torsion sheaves. So we have the simple torsion sheaves OX located at a point X of P1. And then we also have non-simple torsion sheaves with support at just one point, so indecomposable but non-simple of any length. So this is torsion sheaf of length n. Okay. So let us plot all this and see what we get. And furthermore, we should know that the class of a torsion sheaf OX is independent of the point. So this is because we can find a function with a single pole at X and a single zero at Y. Okay, so let us plot all this and see what we get. So let us put the degree like this, and the ranks like this, and let us say that this is rank 0, this is rank 1. We know everything will happen in rank 0 and rank 1. And let's say that this is degree 0, 1, 2, minus 1, and so on. So we first look at the line bundles. Then these are rank 1, and we can have arbitrary degree. So we have the whole line here. And it goes this way. And then if we look at the torsion sheaves, then we can have, so they're rank 0, and we can only have positive degree. So this is 0 here, and this is 1. Let's say this is 1. So on. So we get something like this. And now if we look at this a bit more carefully, then we can realize that this is just the root system of SL2 hat, but a certain half of it. This is the root system of SL2 hat. This is the positive. And in fact, one can show that this is compatible with the Euler form on the one hand and the Killing form on the other hand. So really what we get is we get a lattice with a bilinear form and a certain subset of this. And this is exactly the same thing that we get from Kasmoudi theory, in this case of SL2 hat. We get the lattice and bilinear form and then the set of positive roots. Okay, so this is no surprise, because here, again, remark is that the Dinkin diagram of SL2 is this, SL2 hat, and derived category of representations of this quiver is the same thing as derived category of coherent sheaves on P1. So we could have deduced this just from this isomorphism, but this is nice. Okay, so now we want to generalize this to the general case. So general case. Okay, so I have to tell you what is the Lie algebra that is going to play the same role, right? So x and g, remember that we have this ramification index and points, so we get lambda 1, lambda n, p1, pn. So this we put in a star-shaped Dinkin diagram, like this. And this is P1, this is Pn.
So you said that this is part of the root system, you mean the whole thing?
I mean, so this is the positive root, but not the usual Kasmoudi half. This is a good point. This is what you're asking?
Yeah. So you mean those E alpha, only E alpha, and it's positive, or
So we get E. So we get E alpha T to the N, N in Z, and then we get so H T to the K, K greater or equal to 1. So these here, this is, well, maybe I should have said, sorry. This is 0 in the root system. This is delta. This is 2 delta and so on. This is alpha. This is alpha plus delta and so on. So this is not the usual positive half in Kasmoudi sense. This is the loop half. Okay, so we get this Dinkin diagram. And this we can just associate the corresponding Kasmoudi algebra. Okay, and then the Lie algebra that we want is not going to be this Kac-Moody algebra, but the loop algebra of this Kac-Moody algebra. So LXG, this is going to be GXG T minus 1, but then we need plus, so I should say it's going to be a certain extension of this. A certain extension, imaginary extension of this. So the algebra is given by generators and relations. Basically, you take the presentation of loop algebras given by Garland, and you apply it to, you replace in this presentation the simple algebra by Kac-Moody algebra. And then you will get something which is bigger than this. So for instance, examples, if G, XG is finite, then LXG is affine with the center. And if G, XG is affine, then LXG is toroidal algebra with the full center. With the full center. Okay. And so now the next thing we need to do, we need to find a half in this root system. So maybe I should say this Lie algebra, we just said Q hat, is graded by Q plus the extra imaginary root. And then inside of this, we have delta plus. This is the root system of the following algebra. So T L T plus N plus T T minus 1. So I have to be a little bit precise where so we consider the maximal parabolic subalgebra in the Kac-Moody algebra where we take off the central node. This is maximal parabolic corresponding to center, central node. And then this has a Lévy component, and then N plus nilpotent radical. And then this is plus extension. So, okay. And then the proposition is the following. So the first proposition is the following, is that, well, at least the Grothendieck group matches up with this root system together with the Euler form. So proposition, if we look at this category of equivariant Cauchy sheaves, the Grothendieck group of this is isomorphic to Q hat, and the Euler form here goes to say analog of the Killing form. Okay, so this can be given explicitly. And then, unfortunately, now it's only conjectures. So conjecture one, this is going to be analog of Katz conjectures for quivers, Katz conjecture and theorem. So conjecture one is that, let's call this map, well, is that class of indecomposable. So we're talking about indecomposable G-equivariant coherent sheaf or indecomposable parabolic vector bundles. This corresponds exactly to delta plus. And also, so the usual one, if alpha real, then there exists a unique F such that F is alpha. And then if alpha is imaginary, then we have families. There exists families of F such that F is alpha. And now one wants to say even more. So this would be Katz's theorem. But actually, the Katz conjecture also should hold. So number two is that now we take K to be a finite field, then the number of absolutely indecomposables this is P alpha of Q. This should be a polynomial with positive coefficients. And P alpha 0, this should be the dimension of the Lie algebra, corresponding Lie algebra. So LGX of weight alpha. Okay, so remarks. First remark is that conjecture 1 is also made by Kolibouvi. And he's motivated by giving solution to so-called Deligne-Simpson problem about flat vector bundles on P1 minus a few points with a given monodromy around the point. And he made some progress recently. So he was able to show in one direction. Okay, so his paper's on the web. And second is that conjecture 1 and 2 hold if the genus of X is less than or equal to 1. So this still leaves lots of examples. But no derivations, just the full center. Okay, so back to the examples. So if you remember, in class A, we had X is P1, and G is a subgroup of SO3. So then the corresponding Lie algebra that we get is just G hat by given by Mackay correspondence. So this is LGX. It's GX given by Mackay correspondence. And if X is an elliptic curve, then if G is Z over 2Z, then we get toroidal algebras. This is toroidal. I don't know how to denote it. Toroidal algebra of type D4. And then if G is Z over 3Z, Z over 6Z, then we get E6 and E8. And if G is Z over 4Z, then we get E7. Okay, so we get only these four types of toroidal algebras. But these four, the fact that these are special is well known in the theory. So they correspond to star-shaped Dynkin diagrams, but also they correspond to certain kinds of elliptic singularities. And okay. All right, so now we want to have some link with the theory of quantum groups. Yes. So, right, so we get the full center in half of the weight spaces. So it's important. The extra central piece is important here when we count the multiplicities. There's one extra central piece that enters. Okay, so now we want to get, now we want to do more than that. We want to construct a quantum group. So we want to do analogs of Ringel's construction. Okay, so maybe two. Link with quantum groups. So here we have to use the notion of a whole algebra. So let me just describe this quickly. So this was done a much better way by Xiao. Okay, so C, a abelian category, such that two things. First of all, the Homs and the X are finite, just as abelian groups. So Hom between any two is finite, and X1 between any two is finite, and B, hereditary. So XI MN is zero if I is bigger than one. So for instance, we can think of a K-linear category with finite dimensional Hom and X over a finite field. This is the example that we're going to have. Then, from this, Ringel and Hall explained to us how to construct an algebra by counting extensions, basically. Extension space in this. So this would be completely uninteresting in the case of semi-simple abelian categories. And so the nice way to present it is the following. We consider I is the set of isoclasses of objects in C. So right now, let us equip this with just the no topology, so discrete topology, and then let's just look at the functions on the set with compact support, so finitely support functions. Let's just call this HC. This is the set of F from I to C, such that support of F is finite and then we can equip this with a product, convolution product, with respect to inclusions. So if I have two functions, fg, I want to evaluate on the class of an object M, then this will be the sum over all subobjects in M of f of n times g of M over n. And this is well defined because of all the conditions of finiteness that I impose. So there will only be finitely many subobjects of n for a given class, but these two functions have finite support. So this is well defined. Okay, so this is the whole algebra. And so, of course, it is not commutative because this says, this basically counts extensions between two objects. And well, we can have extensions in one direction, but no non-trivial extensions in the other direction, right? Between so this really is the algebra that counts extensions and puts it all into an associative algebra, because okay. So remark is that this is actually also bi-algebra, but now. Even the finiteness assumption is not enough to guarantee that it's a genuine bi-algebra, so it's a topological bi-algebra. So, remark, HC is topological bi-algebra. Okay, and then in the examples, we should twist a little bit this algebra by the Euler class, so by the Euler form. So let's suppose that K is a finite field, and that C is K-linear. So with finite dimensional Homs and X as we want, then we use the twisted product. Let me say H prime C. With a twisted product, where twisted product f with g of M is the sum for all sub-objects. And in M, and now we have to twist by the Euler form. So this twist is important. And I'll just Q 1 half of M N. This, strictly speaking, is half of the Euler form. So this is HOM MN minus X MN, and then the same thing as before. So F of N, G of M over N, and this should be maybe M over N. Okay. What do you mean? Right, right. This is not the half. Right. This is the first part. Right, right. This is not the half of right. Okay. So then we have the following theorem. So our category is fine because we are looking at coherent sheaves on a projective variety. So the HOM space and the X space, they're all finite dimensional. And if we work over a finite field, then we can actually do this counting procedure. This is going to be well defined. So so then we have analog of Ringel's theorem. So theorem, so here K is our finite field FQ. So there is a map from the quantum group into the whole algebra. So UQ of LXG plus into this whole algebra. And this map is injective. Psi is injective for genus of x less than or equal to 1. So this includes the toroidal algebras. And so conjecture is it's always injective. But this conjecture now is strictly something about bilinear forms on these algebras. So I need certain non-degeneracy of invariant bilinear form on these algebras. But this is still a hard problem. And maybe I should say that in the case of X is P1 and G is just 1, then this was done by Kapranov, and this is again the motivation. And then I should say that there is a derived category version of this in the case of toroidal algebras. So derived category version, which is better in some respects and worse in others, in the meaning, in the sense that we get the whole Lie algebra, but we don't get the Q deformation or the enveloping algebra. So this is done by Lin and Peng. This is for genus of X equal to 1. Okay, so this is something. But it doesn't help us so much, for instance, for representation theory of this algebra. Because so even if in genus less than or equal to 1, we can describe the image rather precisely, still we cannot say exactly what it is. In particular, this is not the way you construct canonical bases. So in order to construct canonical bases, which is what we're really interested in, then we have to use a different, less naive construction. So okay. So the third part is a canonical basis. So here, the motivation is more by analogy than really use, because representation theory of these algebras, so in the case, except in the toroidal algebra case, this algebras are not really well studied. So canonical bases are useful for representation theory, and representation theory isn't there yet, but anyway, so the idea. So this is Lustig's construction that we want to adapt. So what is the idea? Is that in this construction here, I just said, I look at the set of isoclasses of objects, and I put the discrete topology on it. And then we need all these finiteness conditions and so on. But this is kind of brutal, because this set should come with some kind of topology that we should not forget. So we need a kind of topology on the set I. And so we should realize I as a quotient of some kind of variety E by some group H, where E is some algebraic variety, and H is a reductive group. Right? And then, for instance, we can talk about, so elements of I then are orbits, and then we can take the closure of an orbit, and this would contain other orbits, and then we get some partial order, for instance, already. And, okay. So here, the necessary things exist. And so this is the quad schemes. And so what is a quad scheme? So this is something that is useful in the construction of moduli space of vector bundles on curves, which is exactly more or less what we want. So okay, so suppose that F is a certain, let's say, G equivariant coherent sheaf on X, and alpha is any element in the Grothendieck group, K0, coherent sheaf on X, then what this quad schemes ideally should be, this should be the set, this is like a Grassmannian, it's the set of quotients of F which are in the class alpha. So this is a set of maps, phi, from F to some other sheaf H, such that class of H is alpha. And then on this set, on this algebraic variety, so this, in the good cases, this is a projective variety. So now we're going to do everything over C, because this is going to be enough. So this would be a projective variety, and the group that acts on this is the group of automorphisms of F. Acts. So we have to be a little bit careful, because this group usually has a lot of unipotent part, and so we have to choose carefully. So, but the way to do it, let me do it in the case of P1, and then one can see what one should do in general. So already in the case of P1, I think this is interesting. So, okay. So X is P1 and G is just 1. Then we have the spaces Qn Rd. And for this, I will take a slightly different space. This is the space of maps from On to some sheaf S, surjective, such that, well, the class of F is Rd, but also I need a certain condition, which is often taken in moduli space theory, which is that phi induces a surjection between the global sections. Anyway, this is technical. Okay. And in the case when n is equal to r plus d, then the GLN orbits. So GLN, this is automorphism of ON. Then the GLN orbits correspond exactly to isoclasses of sheaves of rank of class RD generated by O, generated by global sections. So this is a certain nice set of isoclasses of sheaves. And let me give examples of these sets because I think they're interesting. I'll quickly give examples. So examples, so Q1, 1, 0. I'm looking for a quotient of O, which is rank 1 and degree 0. This is just a point. Q1, 0, 1. This is P1. Then, for instance, Q2, 1, 1. This is P3. And it has a nice structure. Here we have orbit corresponding to O of 1. And then we have lots of orbits corresponding to O plus OX. And then, if we look at Qn, 0, n, this is the torsion sheaf. This is just the Grassmann n, 2n. And, okay, so, okay. This we should see as a compactification of GLN. And, okay. All right, so now what we do is we should apply try to apply Lustig's method. So instead of considering G invariant functions, which would be exactly what we did before, we have to consider, so I'll just state briefly, Lustig's method is replace G invariant functions on these quote schemes by complexes of constructible sheaves. Okay, so and then I'll just skip and then say that this method can actually make to work. So this gives canonical basis, but here we only have topological canonical basis. This gives topological canonical basis for these positive parts of a quantum group LXG, and this when genus of X is less than or equal to 1. So again, I need this hypothesis, but the conjecture is, so this gives a certain set of elements and a certain algebra, and conjecture is that this algebra is a certain completion of this. So here it's just inverse direct limit, inverse limit. And conjecture, this should be true all the time. But okay, so, and the proof here is really different from Lustig's proof because Lustig uses a lot of things about quivers, and we have fewer tools here. So the main tool is the so-called HN filtration. And this is also motivated by work of Heinecke. Okay, so I have, Jimmy, just 1 minute to say what one would like to do now. And so the next thing to try to do is to construct representations of these algebras. And so third part is representations of these algebras. And so this is only hopes. So I will just maybe recall briefly Nakajima construction. So Nakajima considers P2 with a gamma subgroup of SL2C acting, and inside we have P1 at infinity, which is preserved by gamma invariant. And then what we do is we consider the moduli space, the MW, this is moduli space of gamma torsion free coherent sheaves on P2 with fixed behavior at P1 at infinity. So basically this means that I have an isomorphism from F restricted to the P1 at infinity with a certain fixed sheaf depending on W. Right? Now you look at all these moduli spaces, then Nakajima construction is an action of the affine algebra on the homology of this space. So then G hat gamma acts on the homology of this space. And this gives a nice construction of integrable representations. Integrable highest weight representations. And so this is useful both ways. This will help us to construct the crystal of this integrable highest weight representation, and on the other hand, this also tells us what the homology of this variety is. And so here the analogy is we should consider the cotangent bundle of X, and G acts on this, and then we want a certain completion of this, so we can look at cotangent X plus O, and we look at the projective space over this. This is over X, so this now is a projective surface, and it contains two copies, S. So we have two copies of X inside S. We have X0 as the zero section, and then we have X infinity as the infinity section. And then we want to consider moduli space, say alpha. This would be moduli space of G torsion-free coherent sheaves on S, and such that the restriction with the framing at infinity isomorphic to a certain sheaf depending on alpha. Here alpha would be an element in the Grothendieck group of this category. And so then it seems interesting to study the homology of these spaces, try to apply the methods of Nakajima, and then the guess would be that this should be a representation of this algebra LGX. But this is okay, so I think I should stop here.